We're not entirely sure what the lectionary is thinking, in that it skipped over a whole bunch of important parts in the life of Joseph. As you may recall from last week to this week, there's a number of years in there, about 20, in fact, that leaves out quite a lot, that perhaps leaves us a bit at sea. Now, I think most of us, perhaps even all of us, are reasonably familiar with the story of Joseph, but just to refresh our memories, Joseph, who was given to, well, I think his older brothers would say running his mouth, or perhaps even something a little less flattering than that, was set upon by those same brothers who threw him in a well that didn't have any water, and subsequently sold him into slavery. From there he went to Egypt, where he rose in influence in the house of a man named Potiphar. He was then, because he refused to take advantage of his position with Potiphar's wife, he was thrown in jail. From there, he ended up in the house of Pharaoh, where he eventually rose to this particular stage that we meet him now. He is the highest you can possibly be in Egypt, which was the superpower of the day, without being an Egyptian. Depending which translation you read, or translation you use, in some places he refers to himself as the Pharaoh's father. He makes everything happen. An interesting place to end up, considering where he started. Well, as I was looking at the lectionary and trying to decide what to talk about, I mean, the story of Joseph is fascinating in and of itself. We can spend a lot of time there. I sometimes wonder why we have some of the stories in the Bible that don't have this obvious, instant application for what we should do today, like lots of what Paul writes and other things in the New Testament. Jesus talks in parables that are usually pretty straightforward, that there's something we need to do, but in the Old Testament often we have just stories of people. And I've thought about this, and I've talked about it, Heather and I have talked about it fairly often, and I think at least part of it is to remind ourselves, or to remind us when we read Scripture, that human beings really haven't changed that much in the last several thousand years. We tend to take our heroes, whether they're athletic people or politicians or artists or biblical characters, and put them on a pedestal in such a way that they end up being, well, not exactly cartoons, but they become very one-dimensional, and we ascribe things to them, and we forget that they're human beings. We think of the patriarchs in the Old Testament, Abraham, Isaac, and Joseph. Think, wow, Jacob and then Joseph, and we think all these fabulous people, and we actually read these stories and think, wow, they're really unpleasant sometimes, just like I am. They're really awful, but they're really nice sometimes, just like I am. And so we could spend some time with the characters, particularly in the Old Testament, just to remind ourselves that God isn't surprised by exactly how awful we can be or how wonderful we can be, because that's just the human condition. We've always been that way. And I thought of going in that direction with the story of Joseph, because it's one of the longest stories we have of anybody, of a family. It covers, you know, decades. But something kept coming back to me. And that's where the sermon title comes from. Well, that was unexpected. And this is something that you run into now and then. It's not quite an internet meme yet, but that was unexpected is a way that people describe something that's sort of surprising. And it's frequently used in a bit of an ironic, raised eyebrow sort of way. Well, that was unexpected. For example, as I mentioned, I was in Saskatoon yesterday at a delightful family get-together. So wasn't really watching any football, but to see that at one point the score was, what, 4-1? Like, that's a pitcher's duel. You know, this is the wrong sport. You know, well, that's unexpected. You know, we use that sometimes, that phraseology. Do you wonder if Joseph's brothers might have been tempted to do that? Only not so much in the arched eyebrow kind of thing, but just imagine for a moment. It's been 20 years since you took your know-it-all brother and threw him in a well, sold him into slavery. You haven't really thought of him much except when you see your father, because he still isn't over it. Do you think they were just a little surprised? Well, luckily we don't have to figure that out ourselves. Just read the text. Of course they're surprised. And there's a couple of different ways you can look at it. Bev read for us this morning that they were stunned and couldn't say anything, which I think is a perfectly accurate translation, but I prefer this one. Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Joseph, is my father still living? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Amounts to the same thing. They couldn't talk. But when you think about it, we all have these sort of lower, baser instincts. And you tend to judge people on the basis of what you would do in their shoes. And I think we can safely say that Joseph's brothers had made some decisions in their lives that would not lead them to think that people would respond to them with grace or mercy. I think you can safely say that when you have come to the conclusion that the best thing you can do for one of your brothers is to throw him in a well and then sell him into slavery, because the alternative is to kill him, you've pretty much hit rock bottom when it comes to sort of familial relationships. And so I don't think it's impossible, we don't know what they were thinking, but I don't think it's impossible that people who would come to that kind of a decision about a brother who's primarily irritating. Joseph didn't beat them up. He didn't steal their girlfriends. He was just annoying. I think it might have crossed their minds that in that those lightning flashes that we have in moments of crisis, that, you know, if this was me, I'd probably kill me. Oh my. And they've demonstrated that's the kind of people they were. So it's not unlikely that they would think that way. So I'm not surprised they were frightened, or at least stunned into silence. Joseph is a fascinating person. Because listen to what he says further on. I mean, he's looking at his brothers who are speechless, which I don't think surprised him any, and I suspect at some level, at least a little tiny bit, kind of pleased him. But still, he wasn't surprised. And he said, come close to me. And so they did. And he said, I'm your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt, just in case they hadn't figured that out for sure yet. And now do not be distressed. And this is, I think, one of the most insightful phrases in the Old Testament. And do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here. I think we can safely say that Joseph's brothers were not really gifted in the that sort of empathetic view of the world. But I also think that as human beings who have been watching their father grieving for the last 20 years, that at least at some level, they must have felt guilty about what they did, and felt bad about what they put their father through. Even if they didn't care about Joseph. Like, even if Joseph was out of the picture, and every time they thought of him, they just thought, good, he's gone. I suspect that interacting with their father and seeing that he still keenly felt this loss, I think Joseph's onto something here. When he says, don't be angry with yourselves at what you've done. Because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. Well, that was unexpected. God is all about turning up in unexpected ways. Those of us who have a high view of Scripture and a high view of God, we look at this and we think, you know, God, you probably could have done this a different way. And he could have. God, who knows all things, knows the beginning from the end and the end from the beginning, is all powerful, and all of those omnis, could have done this a different way. Of course he could have. But what God did, as he always does, is he paid careful attention to the volitional nature of human beings, allowed them to make really appalling choices, and then brought unexpected goodness out of it. And we might quibble with God about his timing, about taking too long, or whatever else it might be, but that's God's part of the deal. We can quibble, but we can't really do anything about it. What we can't do is say that God didn't bring goodness out of a horrible, horrible situation. I mean, think about it for a moment. You already have this tremendously complicated relationship with Joseph and his brothers and that whole family. Having talked to people who have one child and then talked to people who have two, three, and four, as far as I can tell, there's an exponential increase in complication with the number of children you add. And I don't know anybody who's polygamous, but I suspect the same thing holds when you start adding spouses. So here you have this family with multiple spouses and multiple children. How could it not be complex and complicated? It had to be. All kinds of horrible things could have gone on in there, and I'm sure they did. And it would have been easy to just look at the complications and throw up our hands and say, well, whatever happens, happens. Or it would have been easy for God, because God is who God is, to just make all these people a lot more decent than they were. And let's not leave Joseph out of here. Let's not forget that he tormented his brothers by sending them back with stuff and suggesting that they'd stolen things and all the rest. I mean, Joseph is hardly the peak of kindliness here either, understandable as it might be. I mean, you have this whole complicated with everything going on. You just think, well, what could possibly come out of there? As it turns out, the salvation of God's people and millions more Egyptians. God took what was an unequivocally awful situation and brought good out of it, because that's what God does. People who complain about God's inactivity tend to complain that God doesn't do what they want them to exactly the way he wants them. They want him to exactly when they want him to. And I understand that. I frequently feel the same way. God, you should do this thing for me because it makes sense, well, to me. When I actually say it that way, then I become much more humble. It makes a lot more sense where I fit in the grand scheme of things. But we don't think that way right away. God is able to take some of the worst situations we can possibly imagine and turn them into something worthwhile. I'm not sure what he's doing with this fly. And many of us, maybe even all of us, have seen this. There are things in my life that I would never have chosen. I've spoken about lots of them. You know what many of them are. There are things that I would never have chosen that nobody who has the slightest shred of humanity would have chosen for me either. And yet God brought good out of it. When Heather and I first got married, we didn't think we wanted children. We were opposed to the notion of children. We just didn't know that we wanted them. And we figured if you aren't sure you want kids, you probably shouldn't have them. And after a period of time, we decided, yeah, we think we did want children. So it was kind of peculiar that we then had a couple of years of infertility treatment to go through, which was peculiar and painful and frustrating and a lot of other things. And then we got pregnant. And then Elizabeth died. We named her Elizabeth because we thought she was a girl. We didn't know. At that time, in the early 90s, the supports that you got for a pregnancy loss, at least in Regina, were abysmal, would be a kind way to put it. And it was the worst day of my life, bar none. I don't think I will ever have a worse day than that. I don't think it's possible for me to have a worse day than that. I hope I don't, because I barely survived that one. Came out of it eventually. And there's a peculiar thing that happens with people who go through things. It doesn't always happen, but it often does. And even though you may not make a big thing about it, we were certainly open about infertility struggles, and we were obviously open about the loss of Elizabeth. We had a memorial service, which some people thought we were crazy to do so. I don't have a body. How can you have a memorial service? They didn't even know her. Didn't even know it. We named her Elizabeth Amy Johanna. We did all of those things. But we didn't go around introducing ourselves as, hi, I'm Barry, I went through infertility treatment and then lost my baby. What's your name? Of course not. You don't say things like that. That's just crazy. But when you've gone through something and it has turned you into a different kind of person, you sort of radiate something or other, and people who you don't know anything about this will start talking to you about some of these things. And since that happened, I've had more opportunities for significant conversations about loss, about death, about miscarriage, about infertility than I ever would have imagined. Than I think ever would have been possible. Does this mean that the loss of Elizabeth was somehow a good thing? No, absolutely not. It was unequivocally bad. The event was unequivocally bad. Throwing Joseph in a well and selling him into slavery was unequivocally bad. The fact that they could have killed him and didn't doesn't change the essential badness of that action. But God brought good out of it. God brought good out of the worst day of my life in ways that I never would have expected. It has given me a level of patience and understanding with people that I was incapable of having before. I don't think I said it out loud, but at the conclusion of one of these conversations that came out of nowhere with a friend of a friend, someone who I barely knew, who was talking to me about their own struggles with talking to people about the loss of their child, with people who said, it's not even a baby. What are you so concerned about? And when I was able to provide at least some kind of comfort at the conclusion of the conversation, I don't recall ever saying, well, that was unexpected. But I could have. Because I couldn't have had that conversation before. I don't think I would have been one of those people who said some of those incredibly foolish things that people say. Nobody said to me after Elizabeth died that, well, Jesus needed her more than you did, which is good. Well, I would have just walked away. If you would have said it to Heather, I think she would have punched you. I'm not convinced she wouldn't yet. But now she'd do it from the perspective of pastoral care to help you grow. I don't think I would have said something that insensitive. But I'm incapable of saying something that insensitive now. I've been there. God brought unexpected growth into me through something that no one would choose for themselves or for me, because that's what God does. The story of Joseph has all kinds of things to teach us. It's a beautiful story of redemption. It's a full range story of what it means to be a human being and follow God, that it's not easy, it's not simple, that just because God has great plans for you doesn't mean that you won't do what appears to be your best to mess them up. God will still do what God plans to do in spite of that, in the midst of that. And I don't know for sure, but my guess is that everyone here has something in your past that you would never have chosen that has made you a better person. Does that mean that God, somebody did say this to me once, did that mean that God killed my daughter so I'd be a better person? That was a long time after it happened, which is good. No, that is not what it means. What it means is that God has chosen to respect our ability to choose and even to choose poorly. He has respected humanity's desire to go their own way from the fall to now. And he has chosen to work in a context that still respects who we are as volitional beings, even when we don't understand it, and often we don't. But we continue to see God unexpectedly appearing in our lives and the lives around us, taking things that were intended for evil and turning them into things that are good. Joseph's brothers had no interest in saving Egypt, if they even thought of Egypt. They were selfish enough to want to save themselves, but they didn't throw Joseph into a well to save themselves. They just did that because they could get away with it, because they were tired of listening to him. They didn't like him. And God looked at that unequivocally bad choice and said, I'm going to bring something good out of this. And he did. We have those same opportunities. This doesn't mean that we go back and revisit our younger selves and say, oh, don't worry, it's not that bad. Because it is that bad. And when we talk to people in the midst of things, we don't say, oh, don't worry, God will turn this into good later. So just, it's not that bad. Because it is that bad. Instead, we remind ourselves that a gracious God reaches out into a fallen world to continue to redeem his people every day, to continue to work out his purposes in ways that always make sense to him, that sometimes we have to look back in retrospect to see how they make sense, but that are always bringing glory to him and honoring us. It's okay for us to look back at those things. Sometimes we see the value, sometimes we don't yet. And it's okay for us to look at things and say, well, that was unexpected. It's a reminder that God is not limited by what we think. He's not limited by what we desire. But a sovereign God uses the pain of his people without ever minimizing it or dismissing it to bring good into the world. Jesus knew what pain was. He never dismisses ours, but he takes it and does things with it that we would never have imagined. Once he saved all of the Middle East from famine, and sometimes he's brought comfort to the grieving. Our God is a God who does unexpected things because he loves us, not because he likes surprises. But they're there for us to take what has been intended or has been for bad and make it into what is good. Amen.